Bhagavatam today because the Krishna Leelas are so attractive. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 8. Lord Krishna shows the universal form, text 31. Evaṁ daṣyānyuṣyati kurute mehanādhini vasto. Oh, really? What's on the board? Text 30 is on the board. Okay.
Oh, sorry. I asked this today. I wrote up 31 for yesterday's class, and then I was advised that someone was told me it was 31 today.
Yes. But it's 30 on the board.
Yes, I made a mistake.
All right, we'll forgive you. Krishna and Balaram also make mistakes. We're going to hear about that, but it's of a different quality. So they will discuss the mistakes of Krishna and Balaram. All right. Hastagre rachayati vidim pita kalu kaladhyayish. Chidram hyantar nihita vahyuna shikya bhande shutadvid. Dvantagare dutamani ganam swangam artha pradipam. Kale gopyo yahi griha kriyeshu suvyagra chitta. Hastagraye rachayati vidyam pita kolu kaladhyaish. Chidrang yantar nihita vayuna shikya pande shutadvit. Dvantagare jitamani ganam sangam acha pradipam. Kale gopyo yahi griha kriyeshu suvyagra chitta. Hastagraye rachayati vidyam pita kolu kaladhyaish. Chidrang hintar nihita vayuna shikya bhande shutadvit. Dvantagare dhritamani ganam swangamakta pradipam. Kale gopyo yahi griha kriyeshu suvyagra chitta. Hasta agraye When the destination is out of the reach of his hands. Ratchayati, he arranges to make. Vidim, a means. Pittaka, by wooden planks piled together. Alukala Ajay, and by overturning the stone mortar for grinding spices. Shidram, a hole. He, indeed. Anta Nihita, about the contents of the pot. Vayunaha, with such knowledge. Shikya, hanging by a swing. Bandeshu, in the pots. Tatvit, expert in that knowledge, or in full knowledge. Dwanta Agare, in a very dark room. Dritta Maniganam, because of being decorated with valuable jewels. Swangam, his own body. Artapradipam is the light required for seeing in darkness. Kale, after that, in due course of time. Gopya, the elderly gopis. Yahi, as soon as. Grihakriteshu, in discharging household affairs. Suvyagrachitta, are busily engaged. Translation. When the milk and curd are kept high on the swing hanging from the ceiling, and Krishna and Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it. While the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and take advantage of this light by stealing. Purport. Formerly in every household, yogurt and butter were kept for use in emergencies. But Krishna and Balaram would pile up planks so that they could reach the pots and would then pick holes in the pots with their hands so that the contents would leak out and they could drink it. This is another means for stealing butter and milk. When the butter and milk were kept in a dark room, Krishna and Balaram would go there and make the place bright with the valuable jewels on their bodies. On the whole, Krishna and Balaram engaged in stealing butter and milk from the neighborhood houses in many ways. Om Ajnana Chivadandasya Ganjana Shalaka Chakshun Litamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasavi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The prime activity of Krishna in Vrindavan is to always invent ever-fresh pastimes for pleasing the devotees there. Everything in Vrindavan is perfect reciprocation. This is what we are seeking in the material world, on the material platform of relationships and activities. We long for perfect reciprocation. That is the dream that is in our consciousness. I will connect with someone and there will be a perfect flow of emotional exchange and confidence. This is actually what we're looking for. And when people do not find it on the material plane, then they start to develop relationships with things, consumer goods. You want satisfaction from those things. This is a perverted form of shantaras, as you know. Immovable things, or things that don't please you until you set them into motion, more precisely speaking. You seek relationships with these things. But you notice that if there's ever been a time when you felt very satisfying reciprocation from a person or persons, then automatically your attempts to derive reciprocation from ordinary objects, that diminishes. A satisfied heart is a heart that has ample reciprocation. So, because the material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world, Maya promises these things to you. Just work hard in material life, and there'll be reciprocation. And even better than working hard these days, it's considered that whether you work hard or not, just let your senses go, and there'll be reciprocation. There'll be peace in your heart. There'll be fulfillment in your heart if you just let your senses go. Why try to train them? Why try to discipline them? Just set them free, and they'll lead you to happiness. And you'll get that reciprocation your hungry heart yearns for. This is the promise made by the illusory energy. And birth after birth, the conditioned souls fall for this promise. That is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mudha Janmani Janmani. Birth after birth, you become a fool because you continue to accept this false promise from material nature that there will be this reciprocation that your thirsty heart requires. You turn to limited living entities and expect ever fresh fulfillment and ever fresh flavor from a limited living entity who's under the control of time, whose body is a machine provided by material nature, and you expect unlimited reciprocation, satisfying reciprocation from such a tiny creature who is crushed by the wheels of time. Crushed by the wheel of time, as Prahlad Maharaj said. Now, there is perfect reciprocation, but not in the material world. As the first verse in Srimad Bhagavatam says, Janmadi Asutaha, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. So in Krishna you find the source of perfect reciprocation. Everything Krishna does, even if apparently it appears to be immoral, is the perfection of morality. Everything belongs to Krishna. He can do what he likes. There's no question of Krishna's actually stealing or taking others' wives. Everything belongs to Krishna. But the pastime energy of the Lord creates situations in which it appears that Krishna is stealing or Krishna is dancing with other wives, just to add flavor and suspense and drama to the pastime. Because Krishna is indeed the supreme enjoyer. He knows perfectly how to enjoy. He doesn't have to arrange his enjoyment for himself. His pastime energy does it all. The Leela Shakti does it all. Now, do you have a pastime energy that will arrange for your enjoyment? What happens when you want to enjoy? You've got to plan. You've got to struggle. You've got to apply yourself and then hope that it will work out. Isn't that the way it is? I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then I hope that in reciprocation there'll be such and such and such, and then if it's good, that'll be great. Now I hope it'll last. So you have to work, you have to struggle, you have to arrange and improvise, all to achieve the goal of your enjoyment. Krishna doesn't have to do that. He has his internal potencies which automatically arrange everything to fulfill his desires. Krishna has unlimited desires and he has the unlimited resources to satisfy all of his unlimited desires. That is the real definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has what is called in Sanskrit, Swaraja Lakshmi. He has the ability to fulfill his own desires. Now look at yourself and see. Do you have such an ability? You're completely dependent on material nature to fulfill your desires. In fact, you can't even remember your desires from your previous life unless the super soul in the heart reminds you. This is how dependent you are. Even if you want to be deviant, if you want to be a non-devotee, you depend on the super soul to remind you how to do it. All you can do with your independence is to choose, shall I serve Krishna or not? Beyond that, everything is arranged by the Lord in the heart, and the material energy provides suitable arrangements. If you want to forget Krishna, you need Krishna's help. You can't even forget Krishna without his help. As a super soul in your heart, he helps you to forget him. All right, you want to plunge into material activities? You want to taste the stale flavor of mundane sense gratification? I'll arrange that you forget all about it. You're powerless even to forget about Krishna. Krishna also helps the devotees to forget. He helps the devotees to forget their material desires. This is the mysticism that happens when you engage in Krishna's service. Sometimes our devotees are in anxiety. Oh, I'm so much besieged by material desires. The imprint is so much in my consciousness. The samskaras are there from so much sinful activity. What will happen to me? What will happen to you is that if you properly engage in devotional service under direction, Krishna as a super soul in your heart will help you to forget your material desires. To such an extent, you'll be astonished. What's happening? This happens as soon as you associate with devotees and begin seva. Those of you who have just begun your Krishna consciousness may note that your friends and family, they immediately can detect what's happening to you. They see that the fever has gone down, and sometimes they become a little disturbed. I don't feel that fever in you anymore. What's happening? I remember when I was beginning my Krishna consciousness. How many years? 33 or 4 years ago. My best friend noticed it. I never told him anything, though. But one day, out of the clear, he just came up to me and said, "What's happened to you? What's come over you? You're just not the same. I'm going to have to find a new buddy, a new friend. This is something missing in you." And then your parents, they can tell. Because as soon as you don't have that feverish, acquisitive, and lusty spirit, people around you notice. What's this? What's wrong with you? And sometimes they feel threatened. Do you think you're better than us? It's like if you're in a hospital and everyone is sick, and then one person in the ward becomes healthy, all the other patients notice. Hey, you're different. You're not sick anymore. You must become aware of the general tendency in material life that people feel threatened if someone tries to escape from the illusion. Because if you start thinking about your situation and acting with intelligence, that means other people should also do the same. And they don't want to do that, so they feel threatened, and they may even strike back at you. Because what they're saying is, you're thinking too much. I don't want to think too much. You threaten me. You're deviating from the standard. The more of us that are in illusion together, the better. The more, the merrier. I told you, example from my childhood about the airport, yes? Yes. How, when I was a little boy, I think I must have been about 9 years old, my father would pile the kids, I think they were, at that time they were, he had three children, into the car for some fun, New York City fun. Was New York City fun to drive to the perimeter road surrounding Kennedy International Airport? Back then it was called something else. And you park on the side of the road, and this road is right at the edge of the airport. So that means the planes, when they come to land, they cross over this road and land right on the other side of the road. So they're practically like, they're landing wheels of these jets. It seems like they're just like a meter or two above your head. So people, in order to have a Sunday afternoon pleasure after church, back then everyone would go to church ritualistically. I remember sitting in church and looking at the clock. Protestant churches always were very punctual. You start at 11, end at 12. So I'm looking at the clock. Oh, 5 minutes to 12. I carry, we get home and watch the baseball game. It begins at 1 o'clock. Let's get out of here. So you'd walk. You know, the service would end, and the minister would be waiting at the door to greet the congregation. He says some, kind words. How are you? This and that. And pat the heads of all the little boys. And I'm just thinking, I just got to get home, baseball game. Let's get out of here. So then after the baseball game, father says, okay, we're going to do a family outing. We're going to have some family togetherness. You've watched your baseball game, your sister's played around with whatever she's doing, your younger brother, he's doing what he's doing, and now we're going to get you all together, and we're going to be a family and go on an outing. Because I was always a bit of a rebel. I was, all right, what is it now? I didn't say that I was thinking, because parents raised us to be very respectful. Because the brother and sister, they were all, family outing. I was already materially satiated for the moment by watching the baseball game. So I had my quota of material enjoyment for the day. So, father would pile us into the car and he would drive to the airport, about 15 minutes away. And many other persons would be parked on the side of the perimeter road around the airport. And they'd all park on the side and then get out of their cars and face the oncoming aircraft, which were just roaring. You can imagine how deafening the sound was. And the aircraft would just come in right above your head and then land on right on the other side of the road. And New York International Airport, it means a plane is landing practically every 60 seconds. So you just stand there. And you feel the exhilaration of material progress. This is the Baba. Wow, mighty technology, jets, airplanes, Most normal kids, they would really be into that. My father was into it, but I wasn't so normal. So I don't know, what is this? This doesn't make sense to me. So, finally, after 10 minutes, I had enough. I was just 9 years old, and I said, this is pointless, all this noise. Suppose one of those airplanes, those jets, just drops down 1 meter too much. The wheels could hit us in the head. I'm not standing out here. So immediately, I opened the door of the car to get back in. And I'll never forget the reaction from my father. What do you think you're doing? You think there's some danger, huh? Well, let me tell you, if there is some danger, we're all standing out here as a family together. We'll experience it together. I never forgot that. I said, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense to me. If you guys want to stand out there and suffer, that's your problem. Why do I have to stand out there amidst all that noise and risk getting hit in the head by the landing wheels of a Boeing aircraft, But my father, he was on to me. What are you doing now? Don't you try to escape. We're a family. We face everything together. I was just, you know, what could I do? I had to come out of the car and stand there with the, you know, brother and sister, and, you know, looking grumpy, and when are we going to get home? You know, I've already watched a baseball game. Now it's time for a football game. When are we going to get home? And my father's looking at me, making sure I didn't try to run for it, go back in the car. You know, he's going to teach me a lesson. This is a family, no matter what. Danger, no danger, illusion, no illusion, we're in it together. I never forgot that. So, I also never forgot the flavor that they were trying to relish, this particular bhava of standing there feeling one with technology, one with, you felt like, yes, we're at the cutting edge of life. Airplanes, jet aircraft roaring over our heads. We're part of modern times. I never forgot that. I was thinking, even as a kid, who wants to relish such a thing? This is how hungry living entities are for flavor, for bhava. You've got to get it from somewhere. So you'll even pack your family in a car and drive all the way to the airport and stand outside and have planes roar over your head just to taste some bhava. And of course, now there are even more perverse ways of tasting perverted bhava. Recently in France, there's a total scandal, even for France. When there's a scandal in France, that means it's really bad. There's no one French here, are they? Okay. You know, French normally consider, you know, they're very liberal and in terms of sinful affairs. They just consider it as just part of life. You drink wine, you indulge in carnality, it's just all, you know, c'est la vie. Scandal? What's a scandal? It's simply attempt to enjoy. So in this one town, city called Angers, I can't pronounce it right, it was discovered that parents had organized a ring to sell their own children into pedophilia. Parents with their own children. The parents would just, together, they'd had a little club, they would smoke and talk, drink coffee in the outer room, while clients would come in and assault their children in another room. Yes, parents, their own children. And not simply low-class people were their clients, but businessmen would come with suits and ties on and a mask over their face. The parents did this. Even in France, the people were just horrified. The judge in court asked the parents, "Do you know what it means to be a mother?" And the lady had to think for a while. Finally, her lawyer prodded her. Mother means protect your children. And it's, mother means protect the children. You know, the lawyer had to remind her. This is what's going on in Kali Yuga. The perversion gets worse and worse. It's not that there's some imaginary line that will only be in Maya this far. This is how desperate conditioned souls are to taste bhava. Now, in Krishna Lila, all the emotions are there, all the tastes are there in perfection. Krishna never works to enjoy. As we said, the prime definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, given in Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, is the Lord, Bhagavan, has this Swaraja Lakshmi ability. He has unlimited desires, and he has the unlimited ability to satisfy his desires. This is a very wonderful definition of God. It's far beyond understanding God as the creator or the maintainer or the destroyer. Think about it. What is it like to have unlimited desires? Actually, when you look at your own desires, they're not that many, are there? They're not very variegated. So we just have a few desires. And what about our ability to satisfy, to fulfill those few desires? You see how tiny and paltry we are? Just a few desires we have. And we don't even have the ability to satisfy those few desires. That is the story of material existence. Now think about Krishna. Unlimited desires with the unlimited ability to satisfy those desires. That is God. So now you see Krishna in Vrindavan. He's providing wonderful tastes and varieties of experiences. And he himself is relishing what he's doing. You've heard in previous days, I'm sure, so eloquent descriptions, especially with Bhuraj and Prabhu here, and Jagadrini Maharaj, you've been giving classes to. So anyway, I'm sure you've heard so much Leela Katha, how Krishna and Balaram would crawl on the ground in Vrindavan and enjoy their childhood pastimes. And they'd get their transcendental bodies smeared with cow dung and cow urine. And that would mix with the saffron and sandalwood pulp that Mother Yashoda and Rohini had spread on their bodies. And they would grab the tails of calves, and the calves would pull them here and there through Vrindavan, get them smeared in that way. And then Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini would just pick the boys up and put them on their laps. Now, if you were a mundane mom, would you pick a child up on your brand new sari after he's got cow dung and cow urine all over his body? I don't know. Would mothers do that? Huh? Yeah? Do you have any experienced mothers here? Or would you clean the child up first before you put him on your lap? Or you put a cloth over you or something? So, Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, no hesitation. They know cow dung and cow urine is pure. And they're so attracted to their children. They love to just lift Krishna and Balaram up and put them on their laps. Just that one act alone is saturated with Krishna prema. Just lifting the babies up, putting them on their lap, and then nursing them, watching the little teeth coming into their mouth. This is the ecstasy of Vatsalya Rasa, parental love of God. And Krishna and Balaram, from their side, they're feeling the affection from their mothers and they're relishing it very much. In this way, everyone in Vrindavan is so satisfied in their particular relationship with Krishna. Between the ages of birth, apparent birth, and 5 years old, the Vatsalya Rasa is predominant in Vrindavan in terms of Krishna and Balaram. This is the period of Krishna's pastimes, especially meant for Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mayi. That's why when Yashoda and Nanda and Vasudeva and Devaki met in Mathura after the death of Kamsa, and Krishna came before Devaki and Vasudeva, reunited again and made his presentation, he said, "I'm sorry you couldn't have enjoyed our childhood pastimes. I'm sorry." But these childhood pastimes are the property of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna would give them ample flavors to relish. Not only them, but all the older gopis and gopas of Vrindavan. You see, when Lord Chaitanya says, Ramya kachchit upasana prajavadu vargenaya kalpita, there's no better method of loving Krishna than shown by the cowherd damsels of Braj, the Brajavadu. He's not simply referring to the young gopi girls, he's also referring to the older gopis who had a chance to love Krishna with the flavor of their son. So, Krishna and Balaram, just by their ankle bells ringing, would create such delight in Vrindavan. That was their main activity, simply to create delight. And the mischievous delights are particularly relishable. But please note that it's not simply we shouldn't discuss Krishna's conjugal affairs with outsiders. Even Krishna's stealing affairs are private and personal. Because outsiders cannot understand. How can this be God? They don't have the basis for understanding Krishna's activities. Just like some book distributors were once discussing with Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was saying how in order to understand God, you must become free from passion and ignorance. So the book distributor said, yes, Prabhupada, the wonderful thing is we're giving people your books and automatically they'll understand. Prabhupada said, no. Unless they come out of passion and ignorance, they cannot understand. In other words, there has to be the association of devotees. There has to be cultivation. There has to be loving exchanges between the devotees and those that they want to inspire in Krishna consciousness. The rarest thing in material existence is for someone to contact a devotee. That is the only chance for someone caught in the machine of material nature, which is otherwise very deadly. Just grinds on and on, birth after birth. It's like last night we had such a wonderful occasion. 86 persons they came. We discussed fear. That is the theme I was given. How to become fearless. So then I explained how so many of our overseas students from India, they have this fear that they're not going to succeed, they're going to fail. The pressure to achieve is so great. How can you go back to India and show your face if you failed? If you're not sending back sufficient revenue, how can you show your face in your village? Because people in India automatically think, your son is studying in Melbourne. He must have the number one position. He must have had the number one grades. Everything number one. They can't understand anything else. So it puts this pressure on the students. So they were quite thoughtful about this. I was just bringing it out into the open. The fear of failing. You spend 3 or 4 years studying IT and then you can't get an IT job. There's fear of this. So much social expectation, family expectation. Especially if you're the oldest son. So this puts quite a load of stress and anxiety upon one. And then there's the marriage expectation, more anxiety. In this way, just by these basic expectations, people become very fearful. In Vrindavan, Krishna shows the perfection of fear. As he's crawling around with Balaram, sometimes other Vrijvasis walk by, and Krishna and Balaram, because they're so young, they think, maybe these persons must be our parents, and they start crawling after the persons. And then they realize, they're not our parents. And out of fear, they crawl away very quickly. So what does this mean? God has made a mistake. Yes. Errors in Vrindavan by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Following the wrong persons and thinking, that's Mum, that's Mata, that's Pita. You could say, just like any ordinary child, Krishna and Balaram, they're committing errors. But no, this is all part of Krishna's enjoying pastimes. How to enjoy being a mistaken baby. And by this so-called mistake, the residents of Vrindavan, they get such delight. Oh, look at Krishna and Balaram. Did you see that? They thought they were following their parents. And now look at the look of fear on their faces. Then what about the anxiety of Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini? One beautiful verse, which I'm sure you've heard deep commentary on. Mother Yashoda and Rohini were tasting a particular transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection. Now this is in Vrindavan, the height of the spiritual world. All the emotions are there in Braj. So, in material life, anxiety is so excruciating, as you well know. But in Vrindavan, as Krishna and Balaram crawl along the ground, and there's dangerous implements there, there's animals, there's all sorts of potential difficulties, particularly animals with horns or animals with sharp teeth. They're crawling around through all that. And so Mother Yashoda and Rohini, they're in anxiety because of the affection for their children. Oh, what are they going to do now? What's happening now? But this anxiety is pure Krishna praying. No material effects from this anxiety. It just shows you how life in Vrindavan is perfect and complete. The gopi girls, later on, they'll be in anxiety too. Krishna's in the forest. His feet are so soft, we don't dare to touch those feet to our bodies. And yet those same feet are walking in the Braj forest, getting pricked by thorns and small stones. Oh, the thought fills us with such anxiety on behalf of Krishna. But once again, this anxiety is purely spiritual. It resembles material anxiety, but the qualitative taste is 100% different. And Krishna knows what he's doing. He knows. I'm walking in the forest with bare feet, and all the teenage girls are thinking about it. That's the topmost lover. I know they're thinking about me. In the evening, I'll go back to Vrindavan playing my flute. And just by glancing at them, I'll steal their hearts again. He knows. As a little baby, he knows. Mother Yashoda, she's in anxiety. And Krishna stirs the pot of these emotions. He knows how to do that. He becomes the most expert burglar in Vrindavan. And he even threatens terrorism. Yes, we'll discuss that. Like the mafia, if you don't give in to their demands, they threaten. They do that in Australia too, so-called protection. If you've got a store that's making money, the mafia sends a representative and says, you need protection. From who? Guess who? And you pay us a monthly payment and we'll make sure nothing happens to your shop. That happens here?
They tried to do it to us here in the temple.
Really? Wow. What did you do? How did you handle that? Were you in charge?
No, this is when I joined up.
What did they do?
Called a better pilot and a couple of other devotees used to stake out at night. And then one night these guys came. They actually fired shots through the front windows of the Prabhupada house and through here. 4 o'clock in the morning. Called a better pilot and another devotee attacked their car
They were happy for such a Kshatriya chance, huh? Reminds me of the in New York City. When they had the tall building in Manhattan, and because it was in the center of Manhattan, sometimes unsavory people would walk in. So there's a lobby, and a devotee's at the desk, and whenever some unsavory person would walk in to cause trouble, because it was a tall building in the middle of New York City, and having a building on Burke Street or something like that. So, it's right in the center of town, great, but you also got to be careful who's coming in the building. So an unsavory would walk in, and so then the devotee who's manning the reception desk, he would always, just like you have the intercom system, Aniruddha Prabhu, call online, whatever. Aniruddha Prabhu. So he also had a loudspeaker, intercom system to go through the whole building of like 8 floors. So they had the code when an unsavory would start getting rowdy. The receptionist immediately, Nasringa, Nasringa, Nasringa. That was the code, you know. And all of a sudden, you hear this rumble in the stairway as all the big devotees, all the big guys, you know, the wannabe chhatriyas would come piling down the stairs, you know, the t-shirts and gumshoes on, you know, racing out of the showers to get a chance for some action, you know, dripping wet, you know. The copin's hanging off, you know, just, wow, a chance for a battle. They would just come barreling down the stairs, about 10 or 15 of them. They had been waiting for weeks for this. Nasringa, Nasringa. That was the code word. And they would race down the stairs, and they didn't even, you know, once they hit the reception room, they wouldn't even ask questions. They would just immediately see, there he is, and just pile on top of the guy, pound him. Wow, what delight! Gaur Premananji! This is Krishna consciousness! And then, after the receptionist, you know, the temple commander would wait till they got their chance to pound the guy a bit, you know, and then they would call the police. And the police, you know, they were very cooperative, you know. They would never bother the devotees. Occasionally the police would say, did you have to punch him that many times? But they knew, you know, the devotees are harmless people just trying to protect themselves. So the police would just come along and scrape the guy off the floor, put him in their car, and take him to jail, you know. So, in this way, there are all these different flavors of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna would also, he could act like a transcendental mobster. He told the gopas and gopis, the older cowherd men and cowherd women, if you try to stop me from stealing butter, or if I find that there's no butter and yogurt in your house to steal, you know what I'm going to do? I'm coming back tomorrow with a torch. I'm going to burn your house down. Isn't that mafiaism? If I don't find sufficient butter and yogurt in your house, you just wait right here. I'm coming back with a torch, with a flame. I'm going to set your house on fire. In this way, Krishna's stirring the pot of loving emotions. And the cowherd men and cowherd women, they would complain to Mother Yashoda. In other words, indirectly, lovingly criticizing Mother Yashoda. How can you let your son do these things? They would say, when we don't see, Krishna is doing these things. He'll do it right in front of our eyes, or he'll do it when we're not looking. What happens when we catch him? We become so stunned by his beauty that we can't do anything, and right before our eyes he just does all this thievery. We can't intervene. We're just stunned by his beautiful face. Sri Mukha. So beautiful. What to speak of when we don't see? Now, Krishna had a whole syndicate operation going on in Vrindavan. He had a teamwork. When it was time to steal butter and yogurt, first he would send out spies to find out when the older gopas and gopis would be busy in household affairs. And once the word came back, they're all busy, they're all tied up doing so many things, then Krishna would come out and go into their houses and do his mischief. Even Krishna would create diversions. He was so expert in tactics. He would let the calves go. He'd go to their house and let all the calves go, and the calves would drink up the milk of their mothers at the wrong time and ruin the whole milking business. And then as the gopas were scurrying, trying to fix the situation, tie down their calves, get the milking arrangement in order again, Krishna would use that disturbance as a cover to sneak in their house and go for the yogurt. This is how intelligent the child is. He knew how to do it. Teamwork, coordination, espionage, creating diversion. He was doing all these things as a little boy in Vrindavan. Apparently the residents, the Brijvasis, were disturbed, but it was all in love. Actually, Krishna is simply creating the best gossip. Human beings have a tendency to gossip. Did you hear what's going on? So the men often accuse the ladies of being the prime gossipers. But actually men, they don't call it gossip. Men just call it we're just discussing the way things are, being practical. But anyway, looked at without gender bias, it's all Gramya Katha, town talk, or Prabhupada would call it shop talk. You get a bunch of workers in a shop and they, hey, what about this? Did you hear what the boss is doing? What about that? How come that employee's making more money? Shop talk. Town talk. So all the older men and ladies in Vrindavan would engage in this. What is Krishna doing now? How is he stealing? Did you see what he just did? Let's go talk to Mother Yashoda. Basically what they're saying is, let's go bless Mother Yashoda with Krishna Katha. That's the only kind of gossip and town talk in Vrindavan, Krishna Katha. So Mother Yashoda feels quite benedicted. Oh, they're coming. They're going to talk about my boy. So they list all the charges. He does this. He does that. If he doesn't find enough yogurt and butter, he then pinches our babies and makes them cry. He sometimes scratches our babies with his nails. And worst of all, after we clean the whole house, he goes to our puja area and passes stool and urine on the floor. This is God. So they're telling all these things to Mother Yashoda. And then Mother Yashoda possibly contemplates that maybe Krishna should be verbally chastised. So the thought enters her mind, maybe that should be done. And then she looks at Krishna, and her friends look at Krishna, and they see his beautiful face tinged with fear. And they lose whatever desire they had to chastise Krishna. They just become caught up in staring at the beauty of the Supreme Personality of God, his face tinged with fear. What a sight! They don't think Krishna is God. They get to see this face, Sri Mukha. Child Krishna with a fearful look on his face. He really knows how to do it. He puts that fearful look on his face. We sing about that in the Damodarastic prayers. Muhusvasa Kampa Chire Kanka Kanta Stitta Gaiva Damodaram Bhakti Padam. He's bound by bhakti, not the rope. But in order to get Mother Yashoda to put the stick down, he starts making his whole body shake so much that the pearl necklaces around his neck are shaking. He's breathing heavily. He's sobbing. He's wiping the tears from his eyes, and the tears are mixing with the mascara. What a beautiful scene. He knows how to do it. And so Mother Yashoda thinks, it's not good that the child becomes too fearful of me. It's not good psychology. So she puts the stick down. Similarly, in this chapter of the Leela, just by looking at Krishna's fearful face, the elderly ladies of Vrindavan lose all interest whether Krishna should be chastised or not. Actually, that wasn't even their real motivation. The real motivation is just, let's talk about Krishna. Let's go to Mother Yashoda and talk about Krishna. And that's what Mother Yashoda feels. They've talked about Krishna. They're so kind to me. So in this way, whatever Krishna does benefits everyone. There's no such thing as an abominable activity in relation to the Supreme Personality of God. Everything he does stirs the pot of loving emotions. And the end result of whatever Krishna does is that the love, the praying increases, no matter what he does. Therefore, Sri Satyavata Muni in the Dhammadrastic prayer says, may these childhood pastimes always stay in my mind. Such a distinct impression they leave on our consciousness. Krishna knows how to do it. He knows how to be the all-attractive. It's natural for him. It's natural that Krishna steals everyone's hearts. He doesn't simply steal butter and yogurt. He steals hearts. He knows how to be the perfect reciprocator. The residents of Vrindavan love him so much, so Krishna is rewarding them with newer and more exciting pastimes. Just see how I pass stool and urine on the clean floor of your puja room. Now go talk about it. Just see how I pinch your babies. Krishna and his cowherd boys, they had a whole operation worked out how to steal yogurt. As you hear in this verse today, they would, if the yogurt pot was too high, hanging from the ceiling, then Krishna and Balaram had a three-phase program. First, they would pile up planks, find various implements to use as a ladder. They just stack things on top of each other, and then they'd be able to reach the pot of yogurt hanging from the ceiling. And either with their fingers, they would puncture a hole, or they would take a pole with a sharpened end, and they would pick a hole in the pot. That was phase one. No, phase two. Phase one is piling up the planks. You have to get a clear vision of this, the modus operandi. Every aspect of it is saturated with Krishna praying. So the piling up of the planks. Now, how often would you pay attention to some little kids piling up planks in order to climb on them? And how often would that be a memorable event throughout eternity? But when Krishna does it, you focus on these details and you feel your devotional heart expand. So phase one, piling up the planks. Then phase two, picking a hole in the yogurt pot. And then phase three, letting the yogurt pour down into the mouth of the cowherd boy. All essential phases. They would just open their mouths and the yogurt would flow out of the hole of the pot. And then this way they would relish and enjoy it. So Krishna is the ringleader of all this. Balaram's the offsider. Krishna is the main hero. And Balaram, he's the accomplice. And all the result of all these nefarious activities is that everyone in Vrindavan just talks and talks. What is Krishna doing now? Sometimes they would even accuse him, the men. Not the ladies, but the men would be more forthright and straightforward. You know, not so much blinded by maternal sentiment, which is necessary. Maternal sentiment is a very necessary thing. But the men, they were more to the point. You're a thief! What are you doing in my house stealing yogurt butter? You're a thief! And Krishna would reply, I'm not a thief, you're a thief! I don't take this from you, you're a thief! When little kids play here, and sometimes one little kid says to another, you're a liar, do the kids here reply, it takes one to know one? They say like that. So Krishna's doing like that. You call me a thief? No, you're a thief. Why did you call me a thief? And he would just go on with his mischievous activities. And the talk about Krishna would just go on. In this way, the Kumar Lila captures the consciousness of all the devotees. But that's not the end of it all. Coming up ahead is Krishna's Lilas with his cowherd boyfriends. And then comes the period of his time in Vrindavan when he specializes in loving affairs with the gopis. All this is waiting. Now, the point made constantly in Bhagavatam is that by Prichit Maharaj's attachment to hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, his senses are satisfied and his heart becomes fulfilled. We should remember that. Because we must have these things. We must have sense satisfaction and heart fulfillment. That's what it's all about. Face that need honestly and then understand. All that is handled perfectly just by hearing about Krishna. My senses will be satisfied. My heart will be fulfilled just by hearing about Krishna. That's why it's necessary to firmly understand, first of all, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then you'll have the Shraddha to let the process of transcendental sense satisfaction and heart fulfillment take over. And you'll get such pleasure in your heart just by hearing every little thing Krishna does. Just by hearing the details about the sound of his ankle bells. They're so sweet. That sound is so sweet. It's like the sound of cartels. Or, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, it's also resembling the sound of the sweet voices of the Vrijavasis. That's what Krishna's ankle bells are compared to. So you can just imagine how sweet are the voices of the residents of Vrindavan. You can think about the cow dung and cow urine smeared over the transcendental body of Krishna Balaram, mixing with the sandalwood pulp and saffron applied by their mothers. And their little small teeth coming out. In Nectar Devotion, there's a list of the various aspects of Krishna's body as a child, which are provocation for ecstatic love. So the more we render service to the Supreme Lord with attention and care, the more these details just occupy our consciousness. I know at first when you start reading, you may just bypass all these Leela details. Because you're reading it like some kind of mundane, unconsciously you may be reading it like some kind of mundane story. All right, let's just cut to the chase. Let's just get to the action. But as you mature in devotional service, you'll start to relish the details more and more. The details are the action also, because the details are all about Krishna's body, Krishna's qualities, the reciprocation between Krishna and the devotees. That's also cutting to the chase. That's also part of the action. The sound of the ankle bells. The sounds that the calves make as Krishna and Balarama hold on to their tails and the calves are dragging them throughout the mud of Vrindavan. Though praying that Mother Yashoda and Rohini feel just by lifting up their children and putting them on their laps. These things eternally capture the hearts and minds of the devotees. Any questions? So therefore, Sri Satyavata Muni prays, Iti drik salila vi ananda kunde. By this stock of swalila, Krishna's own inner stock of pastimes, special internal pastimes, swalila. Ananda Kunde. The Lord plunges the residents of Vrindavan in the Ananda pool, the Ananda Kund, the pool of liquid ecstasies. He plunges all the Vrijavasis into it. Swagosam Nimajantam Akyapayantam. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Bless you. Okay, it's not required.